Welcome back, crime fanatics. This is True Crime Project, and I'm Kat.
And this is Steph.
And we are coming at you after kind of a emotional day. I'm sure everyone, by the time you listen to this podcast, for sure, there will be a lot more information out. But Steph and I have both been following the tragic plane crash in LA today that killed Kobe Bryant, his daughter, and as far as we know right now, another family and their daughter. So I think we have both kind of been following it, emotional, overwatching it.
I mean, just the post on Facebook I keep seeing, it's just had me in tears all evening.
Yeah, my husband messaged me and there wasn't even any news yet. I couldn't find it anywhere. So I thought, oh, maybe it's a hoax. I was hoping. And then sure enough, a couple minutes later, things started popping up. And it's just a complete and utter tragedy to watch the unfolding of this news, to know there are apparently 9 total that perished in this crash. And of course, Kobe Bryant is a big name. He was an amazing, amazing athlete. But to know that there were children on that flight, to me, is even more of a heartbreaking tragedy. And we don't really know yet, I guess, why or what happened to cause it. But just definitely an emotional, heartbreaking thing, I think, to be watching unfold on the news today. We went to see the movie Bad Boys today, my husband and I, in kind of in the middle of all this, and I was like, but I want to keep checking my phone because I want to know what's going on. And while we're watching this movie, I was like, well, at least it'll be like a little like reprieve, because I'm thinking Bad Boys, like, it's funny. And I didn't really know what I was getting into with the new Bad Boys movie either, because there, for me, I'm like, I was like crying in that movie too, because I felt like there was like emotional hits in that movie too, which I wasn't expecting. And then it was like double fold. Like, I was like, man, like, this tragedy, and then I'm watching this movie, and this movie has a lot of sadness that I wasn't really expecting. So it's just been kind of an emotional roller coaster of a day.
Maybe I won't watch that movie just yet then.
It was a great movie. I loved it, and I didn't even realize that there's going to be a fourth Bad Boys movie in like 2 years, supposedly. But I didn't expect there to be. Ricardo, my husband, knew, and I didn't know he knew. He didn't say anything, that there was like some heartbreak in the movie, and there was like a few scenes that at different parts that were just very emotional, at least for me. So I thought some of it was a little tearjerker, but I was already kind of on like this emotional roller coaster of the day anyways. So that might have just made it affect me more. I don't know, but
I'm sure.
Yeah, it was definitely a great movie. I suggest everybody goes to see it, but oh Lord, guys. I know. I mean, it's like following stories like this, I'm always one that's glued to the TV, glued to things when there's some huge story like this. Like, I remember where I was when Michael Jackson died and when Princess Diana died, and it's always just crazy and emotional. It's like, you don't know these people, but you feel like you do because you followed their lives and careers, and
we grew up with these people.
And, yeah, exactly. So and for this one, it feels like an extra hit knowing that his daughter passed away with him. Like, that's just, for me, that's a real hard pill. So
I saw a meme on Facebook that said, remember how we all used to yell Kobe when throwing stuff in the trash can? And underneath it says, keep doing it. Don't let the tradition die. And like, I seriously started crying over that meme, because my kids say that when they shoot or when they throw stuff in the trash can.
See, okay, so here's the thing. I live in Chicago, so I'm a Michael Jordan girl. I'm gonna die on that hill. He's the best of all time, in my opinion. But so I don't even know what you're talking about, throwing stuff in the trash can and yelling Kobe, because it wasn't, MJ is my goat. But Yeah, but watching him come up and be like the next Michael Jordan, and even Michael Jordan actually posted something saying like he was like my little brother, and watching him was amazing. And just it's really sad seeing all the posts of people who did know him, and
Well,
yeah.
I'm pretty sure I think Mike told me that Kobe didn't mentor any like up and coming basketball players, but he mentored one of the players that currently play for the Celtics. And I'm not sure if it was Jason Tatum, Marcus Smart, or Kemba Walker. Like, I'm not sure which one is which or which one it was. But whichever player it was, it's the only player that Kobe ever mentored.
I mean, he was just kind of coming into himself too, as like outside of basketball. He retired a few years ago. He was starting youth charities and doing a lot of work that was bigger than him. And it makes me sad that he didn't really get a chance to leave his mark. Like, he was just coming in. I mean, he did as far as an athlete, but outside of that, he had just started to become this, I don't know, really great guy that people were seeing other than just like the cocky basketball player who was obviously an amazing athlete. But to see him teaching the game to his daughter and just doing things in his community and being a good guy, it's, I don't know, it's very sad. It's a very sad loss for, I think, not just in the US, but around the world. Like, he's known everywhere. So,
He's iconic.
for sure. And my thoughts and heart is just broken for his wife and three, he has three other daughters. I can't imagine what they're going through tonight. So I hope his wife is able to pull through this. And I'm thinking that having three other daughters is what's going to keep her going. So I hope that they find some kind of peace through all this.
I agree. I hope. You never know how you're going to react until you're put in that situation. And I hope to God that we're never put in that situation. But I hope with everything that they can continue and carry on his legacy.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully he has a 17-year-old daughter. He's got, actually, I didn't even realize how young his youngest is, only 7 months old, which is seems insane to me, but hopefully they will be able to carry on his name and still continue to do good in his memory. So anyways, we don't want to continue to make it a cry fest for the episode, but that's just kind of where I've been at for the day. So, Steph has been researching in a case, and this is a Steph episode. So she's going, I'm going to let her take it. But we will maybe have some chit chat later on in the episode. Maybe a pick me up after.
That's probably good. Especially after my
Yeah.
story, because my story is a little rough.
Oh, this is just going to be one of those episodes. I'm
Just
sorry, guys.
get the tissues ready. We should have a disclaimer in the title of this
Yeah,
episode.
somber, sad episode of episode. What episode are we on? I forgot, actually. 15,
14
16,
or
17?
15.
Gotta be 15 because you're odd numbers.
Oh, I haven't even put that together.
Yep.
You're such
Steph
a.
will always be odd numbers because I can't be. I'm an even number girl.
Well, I guess you planned that one out really well.
For sure, I totally did. And then even when we were supposed to do an episode together, I was like, wait, so then would we start with mine after that? Because then that would put me on odd numbers. I'm like, we can't do
Oh
that.
my God.
Yep. I need balance in my life, Steph. You should know this by
I
now.
mean, I know that, but I guess I didn't really expect you to put that much thought
Oh yeah.
into that.
Oh yeah. Oh,
You're
the
such a
OCD is real. It's no joke.
you're such a weirdo.
For sure. I own it though, 100%. So it is what it is.
All right. So I'm gonna get started here.
Okay.
So America's most prolific serial killer, Samuel Little, was born on June 7th, 1940, in Reynolds, Georgia. His mother isn't named, but Little has said that she was a prostitute, so his father has probably never been known by anybody in that family. His mother moved them to Lorain, Ohio, shortly after his birth. In Lorain, Little was raised primarily by his grandmother. So his mom must have, like, most likely went back to prostitution not long after their move to Ohio.
And left him with his grandparents to raise.
Yeah. He attended school at Hawthorne Junior High. There are reports saying that he had problems with discipline and achievement problems. He later dropped out of school, big surprise, but received his GED later in life. In 1956, when Little was around 16, he was convicted of breaking and entering into a property in Omaha, Nebraska. He was held in an institution for juvenile offenders. It seems that Little didn't stay in one place for very long because he moved to Florida to be with his mom again in his late 20s. He worked various jobs over the years, such as a cemetery worker, gross, and an ambulance attendant. He began to travel more widely. I don't know why I have such problems with, like, the easiest words to say. Like, it makes me feel real dumb when I'm, like, trying to say, like, widely and it comes out a bunch of gibberish.
I have moments like that lately where it's like I can't think of the word that I need, even though it's the dumbest thing. So the other day I was like, Ava, can you get the white things that you hang things on? She's like, you mean a hanger, mom? I'm like, yeah. It's like, sometimes I swear.
Oh my god.
We all have our moments.
So, he began to travel more widely and had even more run-ins with the law. By Little's own account, he had been arrested in 8 states for crimes that included DUI, fraud, shoplifting, solicitation, armed robbery, aggravated assault, and rape. While serving his time for these crimes, he would box, and he has referred to himself as a former prize fighter.
Okay, like in the yard? Wait, what?
I don't know.
They have boxing matches in prison?
I'm sure they just let the inmates just beat the shit out of each other, maybe hopefully to, like, you know.
What? I have a friend who's a corrections officer. I'm going to have to find out because that seems insane to me.
Well, this was also back in the 60s.
It would be the craziest thing. Oh, that's true. I forgot about the time period. But even still, that seems insane to me.
So, in 1961, Little was arrested and sentenced to 3 years in prison for breaking and entering into a furniture store in Ohio. And he's back in Ohio at this point. He was released in 1964, and by 1975, he had been arrested 26 times in 11 states for more crimes, including theft, assault, attempted rape, fraud, and attacks on government officials. Now, that last one, I couldn't find any freaking details about attacks on government officials, but I want to know more about that specific thing. I want to know what the fuck he did.
For sure. Absolutely.
It's just so strange. That's not something that you commonly see someone get arrested for.
No. Not it. That's...
Right? And okay. In 1982, he was arrested yet again, and I'm going to butcher this name, Pascagoula, Mississippi? I don't know. We're going to go with that, though, and was charged with the number of...
Don't worry, our followers will let you know.
He was charged with the murder of 22-year-old Melinda Rose LaPree. Melinda had gone missing in September of that year. This is 1982. But I couldn't find what the date of his arrest was. So, like, after, like, her going missing in September, I don't know when they found him. A grand jury declined to indict Little for the murder of Melinda. But during the investigation, Little was transferred to Florida to be brought to trial for another murder charge. The prosecution witnesses identified Little as the guy who had been with Patricia Ann Mount the night before her disappearance. Her body had been found in September of 1982. Unfortunately, due to mistrust of witness testimonies, Little was acquitted in January of 1984. This is,
of course,
a prime example of how criminals just absolutely fall through the cracks here in the U.S. After his, yeah.
There's so many cases like this. And not only that, like, he's committing crimes. He's not stopping committing crimes. And he has all these dings on his record. It's like, give him a substantial amount of time, even if it's something stupid, because you know he's not done. He just continuously does things and it's escalating of what the crimes are. So why do we keep putting him back on the streets?
Oh, just wait, because
I know. I'm gonna it always gets worse.
I am going to go through the list of everything he is charged for once I get done talking about, like, his life leading up to it. Because, wait, I'll just get to that in a minute. So, yeah. After his release, Little moved to California around the San Diego area. Isn't that where you were? Where were you?
San Diego. So, I've lived in Tustin. I lived in Mission Viejo, and Ricardo was stationed in San Diego.
Okay.
when we got married.
I thought so.
San Diego's where I belong. Actually, it is. But anyways.
Okay. And 10 months after he was acquitted, he was arrested for kidnapping, beating and strangling Lori Barrows, who was 22 years old, and she survived. 1 month later, in November, police found Little in the backseat of his car with an unconscious woman who was also beaten and strangled, and his car was in the same location as the attempted murder of Lori. Little only served 2.5 years in prison for these two crimes, which is ludicrous.
Yeah.
Seems
kind of typical.
Right. He was released in February of 1987, and he immediately moved to L.A. and committed more than 10 additional murders.
Fabulous.
September.
Good thing they didn't put him in prison. Just let him keep going.
Right. September 5th, 2012, Little was arrested at a homeless shelter in Louisville, Kentucky. He was then extradited to California for a narcotics charge. And as soon as he was in California, they took his DNA and ran it through all of their systems and used DNA collected in the murders of Carol Eileen Elfert, killed on July 13th, 1987, Guadalupe Duarte Apodaca? A-P-O-D-A-C.
A-P-O-D-A-C-A. Oh, that's a last name?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Apodaca, maybe? Okay. Yeah. That's a new one for
me. Right. She was killed on September 3rd, 1987, and Audrey Nelson Everett killed on August 14th, 1989. All three women were found in the streets of L.A. Little was then transferred to L.A. to face the three murder charges there. He was charged on January 7th, 2013. The trial for the murders of Elfert, Nelson, and we're just going to call her Guadalupe, began in September of 2014. The prosecution presented a strong case against Little. They had the DNA results as well as testimony witnesses who were attacked by Little at different times throughout his crime spree. On September 25th, 2014, Little was found guilty and was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. Even with the DNA results proving these women died by his hands, he maintained his innocence on the day he was sentenced. He is still serving his time at the California State Prison in LA County. While Little is serving his life sentence in California, a Texas Ranger went to visit him. James Holland went under the ruse of just having conversations with Little, not so much to interrogate him. Holland played into Little's ego and let him feel like he was in control of the dialogue. But after some months, he got Little to confess to more than 90 murders across the United States. I'm going to go through a list of all of them because I really feel they need the recognition for dying a horrible death by the hands of an equally horrible person. Like, I just can't even call him a man because no man.
So I do have a question though. So he admitted to 90 murders, but he's not connected to all of them necessarily through DNA. Are we sure that he committed all of these murders? Or is this possibly one of those cases where you have somebody in prison who's not going anywhere and is bored, so they start telling stories?
Oh no, there is a website that we will share in our show notes. He has actually drawn pictures of unidentified women that he just can't even
Oh,
be bothered.
God.
Oh yeah, I mean, the FBI has validated all of his confessions, which that's why it makes him the most prolific serial killer in modern history. So
Ugh.
this is where you need to hold on to your butts because this is a long list of stuff. On November 9th, 2018, Little confessed to the 1996 fatal strangulation of Melissa Thomas. On November 13th, 2018, Little was charged with the 1994 murder of Denise Christie Brothers in Odessa, Texas. Little pled guilty to this murder on December 13th and received another life sentence. On November 15th, 2018, the Russell County, Alabama DA announced that Little confessed to the 1979 murder of 23-year-old Brenda Alexander, whose body was found in Phoenix City. On November 16th, 2018, Macon, Georgia sheriffs announced that Little had confessed to the 1977 strangling murder of an unidentified woman and the 1982 strangling murder of 18-year-old Fredonia Smith. In the fall of 2018, Little confessed to the 1982 murder of 55-year-old Dorothy Richards and the 1996 murder of 40-year-old Daisy McGuire. Both of their bodies were found in Houma, Louisiana. On November 19th, 2018, Harrison County, Mississippi Sheriff Troy Peterson said that Little had confessed to strangling 36-year-old Julia Critchfield in the Gulfport area in 1978 and dumping her body off a cliff.
Cool.
On November 20th, 2018, Lee County, Mississippi law enforcement officials announced that Little had admitted to killing 46-year-old Nancy Carol Stevens in Tupelo in 2005. On November 21st, 2018, Richland County, South Carolina authorities announced that Little had confessed to murdering 19-year-old Evelyn Weston, whose body was found near Fort Jackson in 1978. Also on this day, he confessed to having killed 20-year-old Rosie Hill in Marion County, Florida in 1982. On November 27th, 2018, the FBI announced that a violent criminal apprehension program team was able to confirm 34 of Little's confessions and was working to match the remainder of his confessions to known murders or suspicious deaths. One of the conditions for Little to give these confessions was to be transferred out of the LA County prison where he was being held. I'm not sure if they followed through with that request, though. In December
But
2000.
so he does want something, which is why he's admitting to these murders.
Yeah, I'm
So
not.
it just always makes me question them. But the fact that they confirmed at least 34 of them is insane. But, ugh.
Yeah.
Okay.
In December of 2018, Little was indicted for strangling Linda Sue Boards, who was 23, in May of 1982 in Warren County, Kentucky. Her body was found on May 15th, 1981, near U.S. Route 68. One of Little's victims was identified in December 2018 as Martha Cunningham of Knox County, Tennessee, who was 34 years old when she was murdered in 1975. On May 31st, 2019, Cuyahoga County, Ohio prosecutors announced indictments with 4 counts of aggravated murder and 6 counts of kidnapping that accused Little of killing Mary Jo Payton in 1984 and Rose Evans in 1991 in Cleveland. Both of these women were strangled and dumped. The body of Rose Evans, who was 32, was found on August 24th, 1991. In a vacant lot on the East 39th Street area. She left her hometown of Binghamton, New York, when she was 17. Evans had been strangled, according to the coroner. Peyton, an anthropologist, had to create a model of what she looked like, but she remained unidentified until 1992, when Cleveland put her thumbprint in an FBI database and got a match. Little picked up Peyton at a bar near East 105th Street and Euclid Avenues. And I'm pretty sure Euclid is really close to Progressive and where the Cavs play.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure. He described her as a short, plump woman in her 20s with brown hair. Little also confessed to another Cleveland woman in 1977 or 1978. The woman murdered was found on March 18th, 1983, in Willoughby Hills, according to the National Missing and Unidentified Persons System. She was likely black and somewhere between 17 and 35. The woman's body had been dumped down a grassy slope near a fence in a wooded area just off Interstate 271. Her body was found by a man walking his dog, and only her skeleton, some clothing, and jewelry remained. Little also confessed to killing one woman in Akron and two in Cincinnati. One of the bodies was dumped outside of Columbus, and one woman he met in Columbus he disposed of in Kentucky. One of the two women killed in Cincinnati was identified as Anna Stewart, who was 33. Her body was dumped in Grove City, which is on the west south side-ish of Columbus. Stewart was last seen on October 6th, 1981, getting out of a cab at General Hospital to see her sister in the hospital. She was killed on October 11th. He killed the other woman between 1980 and 1999. This Jane Doe was between 15 years old and 50. The details of her age and murder are unclear. She was black, slender, and wore glasses and lived in the Over the Rhine neighborhood of Cincinnati with a heavy female Hispanic woman. Little left her beside a cigarette billboard in Ohio on June 7th, 2019. Little was indicted in Hamilton County, Ohio for the murders of the two women in Cincinnati. Little has drawn portraits of many of the women he killed. These portraits have been released by the FBI in hopes of someone identifying the women. At least one portrait has solved a cold case in Akron, Ohio. We will include a link to the website containing all the portraits of the unidentified women in the show notes. There are many videos on YouTube of his interviews and indictment videos. And actually, there is the confession videos from the Texas Ranger on YouTube as well. It's all very strange. He doesn't seem fazed by any of this whatsoever.
Well, he's a cold-blooded killer. He strangles people, which is super
hard. It's difficult.
Well, it not only that, it's very personal. Like, you're in their face. So he strangles people to death. And he seems to have gotten away with it for so long, A, because of the time frame that he was doing it in, and B, because he was smart enough to spread him across the country, so he knew the police obviously were not talking to each other, so if they had similar cases in Kentucky and Mississippi and Florida, that they're not connecting them together as the same killer.
They often said, especially with the cases here in Ohio, that they thought it was somebody who knew a lot about law enforcement because he killed in different counties. Like Cuyahoga County, you know, obviously that's a huge county because it's got Cleveland in it and all that. But like you said, the cops couldn't connect it if it was all done in...
Well, because back then they didn't talk to each other. There was no
social media
database to go through. Yeah. And it was, I wonder, did he know social or did he know police enforcement?
It's unclear. There's really not a lot about his early days, like, out there, because I mean, he was a drifter, not really much to be known about him. But I did watch a almost 50 minute indictment video when he was indicted in Cuyahoga County. And looking at him while the prosecutor is reading these charges gave me chills, because he just sat there, like, stoic as could be, like, without batting an eye. Like, and, you know, he waved his white...
I'm going to have to go watch that when we're done.
I'll send you the link to it, and we'll include that into the show notes as well. But he just... It just gave me chills watching him.
Yeah, I really didn't know a whole lot about him. I know that it was recent that they caught on to this, so I've seen bits and pieces here, but I never went down this rabbit hole, so...
Yeah, and the only reason why, because I don't know if you guys have, you know, caught on to the fact that Kat and I like to do a lot of cases from our home states, but because this was such a huge deal in solving unsolved cases here in Ohio, it was all over the news last year when it broke out that he was the one that killed these women.
And then I almost wonder, though, too, like, how many of these cases do police officers, because they make their... careers on solving cold cases like that too. I wonder how many of these they just really wanted to tack onto him to get them solved, or were really hoping that it was him so that it was solved.
I don't know, man.
I'd be curious. Now I have to go down this rabbit hole. I'm gonna be up all night, guys.
Sorry. I guess I should say sorry, not sorry.
Yeah.
More appropriate.
More accurate, for sure.
Yeah. So I have a little palate cleanser.
Okay.
Kat and I absolutely fucking love baseball. Like, we love baseball. Today I learned that I love wrestling just as much as I love baseball. Like, I have never been to a wrestling match before in my life, or meet, or whatever the fuck they're called. I'm going to have to get a book so I can know. Okay. Because I don't know anything about it. And I sent you the video of Ethan's second match. Right?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when it comes to Steven playing baseball, I know what I need to yell at him and have him do. I was literally just screaming at Ethan, get up! Get up off the floor! Get up! Because I don't know anything about wrestling, but it was very bizarre because he's my outgoing child and Steven is my emotional one, like absolutely emotional. So we tried to get Ethan to come up and sit in the stands with us, and he didn't want to. And so after a little bit of him standing by himself, I went down there with him and he was crying. Like, just sobbing. And so we went out to look at his bracket, and I asked him what was wrong, and he said that he didn't want to wrestle anymore. And I was like, is it because you're nervous? And he wouldn't really talk to me. So I told him he had to get it together, because I was like, you don't really want the other boys to see you crying. I was like, there's nothing wrong with it, but you're about to wrestle a couple of these kids. Like, don't let them see that you're crying. And I told him that, you know, no matter what, if he wins or loses, we're super proud of him, because this is something he's never done before. And, like, nobody in our family has never done it. So the first match ended quite quickly. He got pinned probably within 20 seconds. And the second match wasn't quite a minute long, but he got out of a couple pins in that second match. And I was just so fucking ecstatic over this. And their team name is the Suicide Squad.
Yeah, you told me that. I was like, I don't know how I feel about that one.
Well, and you know, like, I went and wore, like, the school spirit wear that I have, because I have a ton of that. But I was talking to the boys' stepmom, and I have a Cricut. So I found, like, the lettering on Etsy that says Suicide Squad in, like, the movie title, like, font. So I'm gonna make up shirts for us to wear, so that way I feel a little bit more a part of that specific team instead of just, like, the school.
Yeah,
because none of these kids had on school spirit wear. And I'm gonna make Ethan, like, a sweatshirt and sweatpants with his name on it, and with Suicide Squad on it.
Well, and he's probably wrestling with kids who've already been wrestling for a few years.
Yes.
So I hope he doesn't feel bad about it and losing. Like, I hope he'll keep with it. He'll get better for sure. Like, once you get pinned a couple times, you realize, oh, I don't want to get pinned, and he'll get out of it. I dated a wrestler in high school for, I don't know, a long time. We dated for like 5 years. So I do know wrestling actually a little bit, but
Well, good. You
yeah,
can teach me.
it was a very like nerve-wracking sport for me to watch when it's like somebody that you
Oh my God.
spend. I can't really imagine putting my kid in it, honestly, because it's
Before
like very
his first
intense.
match, I looked at the coach and he looked at me and I said, "I'm really freaking nervous." He goes, "Good, you should be." And I was like, "What the fuck? Why are you telling me I should be nervous? Like, you're not making me feel better." And then they called his weight class for the second match. So Ryan and I get up, we walk down there, get there. He had a fucking bye match. So we go down there, and I get all worked up and my nerves are going again. And they're like, "Oh no, he doesn't have to wrestle for like another hour." And I'm like, "Oh my God. Next time, I will pack a fucking cooler though." I did learn my lesson with that because they ran out of like not necessarily healthy options for me because I don't give a fuck, but like bananas and like apples and stuff for Ethan. Something like light on his stomach to eat in between. Like I need to be a better like sideline mom, and I do not do well at that whatsoever.
I just picture you freaking out and screaming on the sidelines. Like, I think you
You
would
heard
make
my
me more
loud ass.
nervous.
You heard my loud ass
Like,
mouth in that fucking video.
with every, I don't know. I feel like you'd make me more nervous. When your boys are to the age where they're going to start driving, are you the one that's going to teach them? Do you think? Are we letting dad do that?
I mean, I don't think Ryan should teach him how to drive. He's not the best driver in the world, but I'm not either.
Should we edit this out?
So, no, we'll leave
Oh
it in
yeah,
there.
you're a crazy driver. I forgot about that.
Yeah. But I mean, I
And
think we'll
one.
both like let him drive us around and all that, but I don't know that I will freak out like that. I think it's just because I'm so passionate about sports that I can't
Yeah.
stand it when they half-ass things. You know what I mean? Because I know they're better than that, and I've raised them better than half-assing things.
Yeah, but he's also in a new sport that he doesn't really know, so it's going to take time. It's a learning curve for sure.
Well, I was trying to encourage him to get up
Yeah.
off the mat, and it was so loud in
By
there.
screaming at him, by
Like,
yelling, "Get up off
well,
the
the coach wasn't around for
mat!"
this match. The coach was at a different mat, and so he didn't have anybody there telling him what to do. And so I supplemented my only advice of getting up off the mat.
Oh man.
But he did on the way home because I was super worried about him getting discouraged because Steven is a natural born athlete. He has a lot of athletic ability, and Ethan has not found his niche yet. But he was so fucking excited about going back to practice on Tuesday. So I'm pretty
Oh, that's a
excited.
good thing.
Yeah.
He got knocked down, but he still wants to do it, so that's a good thing.
Yeah, he's resilient and he's
Good.
feisty, so I hope that comes in handy the next tournament.
Well, and I feel like he's a kid that needs the active sport too, so it's probably
Yes.
good for him.
Yes. So when we came home, I laid the baby down for a nap, and then Mike went to bed because he had to work tonight. And I made the older two go upstairs for a little bit because I had the pack and play set up downstairs to lay Bubba down. And I go upstairs to get Ethan so I could cut his hair too. He's asleep on his bed with the iPad propped up in front
Oh.
of him. And I felt so terrible waking him up. But his hair looked like a fucking Q-tip. It like grows like straight up out of his head and it needed cut.
Oh, that's funny though. Poor kid. He's probably
Right?
exhausted. Well, I do have a little story. I think we should start a new game on this podcast called Guess What State This Happened In?
Yes, I'm down for this.
Okay, so a fist fight broke out at five guys between five guys.
What the hell?
The incident went down on Wednesday in what state do you think?
I'm going to say Texas.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know. I wonder if they have five guys in Texas. It's not Texas. It is Stuart, Florida.
Oh, I was going to say Florida, but I was thinking it was like a trick question. Okay, I lose.
Yeah, it probably wouldn't have been that big of a deal, but it was five guys fighting in five guys, the restaurant. So, and of course it was in Florida. So I thought that made me laugh. As soon as I saw it, I was like, I wonder what state this is in. It's got to be Florida. For sure it was. Do you guys have five guys by you?
Yes, I can't stand it.
Okay. Oh, I've actually never been there. I've heard good things about it, but
greasy.
Oh.
It makes my stomach so upset.
Oh, yeah, I've never been there, but I have heard it was good. But I wasn't sure. I didn't realize if it was all over the country or whatever, but it must be in quite a few states at least. So, yeah, that was my little funny story. If you are following us, please. I'm super excited to see that we have had so many new listeners pop in. It makes me so excited to see, especially when there's like new countries. I almost wish that our thing would break it down in states too, because it would be really cool to me to see if our follower, like what states our followers are mostly in, because it shows. So we have right now, most of our followers are in the US, obviously, but we have quite a few in the UK, in Australia, the Netherlands. We even have one in, or at least one in Israel, Brazil, Netherlands, Ireland popped up like a week or two ago, which I thought that was so cool. I don't know where these people are finding us or how, but I absolutely love that they have. So you guys go give us a rating on Apple, if that's how you listen. We will appreciate the shit out of you. Or on Podchaser, if you happen to go on there, you can leave a review on there, which would be awesome. It just basically makes it, or if you subscribe to us on wherever you listen, Spotify, Google Play Music, whatever, whichever way you listen to your podcasts, make sure you subscribe so you'll know when there's a new episode. And not only that, but the more we have actually following us, the more people will see us. So we appreciate you all. It makes my heart happy every time I see new listeners. And we had so many people listen within the last week to the last episode. Actually, it's less than a week from when it actually went live. It's only been a few days. So
we're at 98 listens Kelsey.
In a few days for just one episode. So it makes me very happy. Now I actually forgot where I was going with this.
We decided last week to start a Facebook group. So you're on Facebook, go search Anxious Stressed True Crime Project Obsessed. I know it's a mouthful, but it's catchy and hopefully you won't forget it. Go join that group. You can post anything true crime related. There's nice discussions going on. And all that. And we also have a contest.
Funny memes. Oh, yeah. Yeah, Steph posted a contest recently. If you follow us on Twitter or if you follow us on Instagram, it's on there as well. But definitely come chat in our Facebook group as well. So I know there was something else I was going to say. And I got off on a tangent about all the different cool countries that are listening. And I forgot where I was going with that. So, I'll remember as soon as we stop recording. So
she'll post it on Twitter as soon as she remembers.
I probably will. I do post quite a bit on there. So,
okay.
So
today we are going to end the podcast with a quote from Kobe Bryant. The most important thing is to try and inspire people so that they can be great in whatever they want to do.